No, we, you know, I mean, we just, we, the Bears are what we thought they were. They're what we thought they were.
Say that one more time, please. One more time. Boom! One more time. Boom!
Welcome to the Barry Essentials. On today's show, we are joined by Ken Barry with Touchdown and Tangents to break down USC's Pro Day and much more. What's good, Prez?
Hey, man. Shh. Listen, man, you know everybody in Chicago right now, man. They want to know, hey, is this Caleb Williams guy, man, is he worth all this, you know what I'm saying, chatter that's been out here? Is he worth the fact that we traded away Justin Fields? Well, you know, audience, if y'all was wondering those type of burning questions, we got Kenneth Barry here today to kind of break some of that stuff down, man. So, Kenneth, get in here and talk to him, baby. What's up, man?
Thank y'all for having me. Appreciate you. And, yes, the answer is yes. He's worth literally every last red cent. He's Caleb's. One, he's the greatest QB prospect in USC history. Mm. Yeah, he's better. He's a better prospect than Carson Palmer. Plus, he broke a ton of records in 2 years. For a guy who didn't even get to play his senior year of high school, he literally took Spencer Rattler's job, became a better prospect and player than him, elevated his game. He's shown constant improvement, and the knock on him, which isn't fair at all. He does a lot of hero ball. He improvises a lot. Well, I mean, when you're asked to make up for literally the worst defense in school history, and that's kind of what happens. USC statistically literally had the worst defense in their school's entire history, and one of the worst historically. They gave up 300 yards rushing, I think, six times, and I'm pretty sure I was at least four of those games. So, you know, it's for what he's done for USC and how he's elevated the program, his star power, the fact that, and it was a big thing, shout out to a friend of mine, Nick Hamilton, he got a question off, you know, in the media scrum after the pro day, and it was pretty much Caleb was talking about how, you know, how important it was for him to truly own his narrative. Craft his own narrative around himself and who he is as a prospect, because he's pretty much had full creative control over everything he wanted to do, you know, from him declaring till now. So when somebody has a full control of a narrative on themselves, you got to respect that, because there's a lot of lies out here about Caleb, and then some people are just like the guy at the combine, just saying stuff for clickbait, and it's gross, and it's just really uninformed.
I wanted to make sure that I did the proper intro for you. So, Ken here, man, he covers USC. So, he is a guy that's been covering Caleb for the last 2 years, and not just Caleb, but USC. And that's why, even on this show, we wanted to make sure that we call the USC's Pro Day. We know that everybody wanted to make it all about Caleb, but the big thing here is that Ken, he's been on the ground. This is a guy that A-Dub and I met at the Senior Bowl, so he's got his chops. He knows what he's talking about. So I just wanted to make sure I added a little color around your introduction, man, because like I said, you came in here already and let it be known. And I agree with everything you said, especially as far as the narrative piece, man, because everybody has a problem with his father's involvement, how Caleb rocked at the combine. And I'm glad you brought that point up, because more of our athletes should control the narrative around them and also their draft process.
Definitely. And again, I appreciate that. I was at the Missouri, the Cotton Bowl between Missouri and Ohio State. Harrison was on the sideline. He didn't play. So, like, people, when we were waiting for Caleb to come in, and he, you know, he came in a little later than everybody else, but he took his time. It's like, when you're the guy, people wait on you. You don't wait on them. And that's a level of equity and power that he has. And let's be honest, white people get scared when a black man shows any real reverence of power or esteem about himself, like, and can actually do something with it and doesn't fall for all the foo-foo stuff that's going out here in the media, because it's really a lot of people out here brandishing racist narratives, and they can say they don't believe it, but do you...
They still carry that water, though.
Yeah, do you promote stuff you don't believe in that could actively come back and hurt you? Like, I don't... So when I hear, like, all the stuff around Caleb, first, nobody was talking about his height when he won the Heisman. Nobody talked about his height when he put up almost like 600 yards of offense by himself against Tulane, and the defense let them down and they choked a 20-point lead in 4 minutes. I couldn't believe it. I was there for that. I'm just like, wow. So when I see guys like Marvin Harrison Jr., who says, I'm not going to do anything. You know what? You just have my medicals. I'm out. One, you ain't going to say nothing because you know who his father is. And two, he's arguably on pace to be better than his father as a prospect. So when you're guys like that, yes, you're supposed to control your own narrative. You're supposed to do it your way. Be classy and respectful about it. I mean, I got no issue. I've interviewed Caleb so many times in the past 2 years. I've seen it all. I've seen him throw on time, off script. I've seen him cover up for people's mistakes. Like, once you know who the guy is, you know who the guy is.
Where did the narratives come from around him and his teammates, right? Because there's the narrative out there that he's aloof. What would you say about that?
When you don't like losing, it'll bother you. And the same way we're like, oh my God, how is USC's defense is terrible? How are they blowing it? He's not going to say it because he's a great teammate and a great leader. He's not going to say, yes, I know our defense just gave up 200 yards rushing in the first half, but I still got to go out here and make sure this offense scores points. USC averaging over 40-something points a game and still have one of the most historically bad defenses. It comes from... There was a couple instances where he didn't want to talk after the game. I think it was a couple times where he didn't want to talk after the game. And then the whole, when a bunch of the captains came out to support the people who didn't want to talk, I think it was after the Washington game. Pretty sure, because that was a major loss. He was coming out there in support of his teammates. Like, I asked Tosh Washington about, you know, every time he scored a touchdown this past season, he was working with the food bank. The food bank would get, like, an insane amount of food, or they get, like, 300 pounds of food for whatever. Like, he's a chef, too. So when you look at the narratives, people like to conveniently leave out context. So when you just say, oh, he's aloof, like him crying in the stands to his mom, he really wanted to win that game. And honestly, that's when everybody knew, oh, USC season is done. They're not going to make the college football playoff. They're not. And then when they lost against Oregon, like, oh, they're not even going to win. They're not even going to make it to the Pac-12 championship game. Like, he's highly emotionally invested in winning. You can look at Oklahoma. He elevated there. He elevated USC. Everywhere he's gone, he elevated. And I think his last high school game ever, he threw like a Hail Mary to win a state title.
Right. I did see that.
And he didn't get to play senior high school. So it's like, you don't get to punish people for a narrative. Just, his father's there. Good. Your father's supposed to be there. It's only a problem when it's a black player's parents. Like, then it's like, oh, their upbringing. And it's like, hold on. You don't do that with white people's.
They didn't do that with Arch Manning and Eli and Peyton.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, right? And even with LeVar Ball, right? And I don't want to get off into like non-NFL talk, but it does make you wonder, like, why is it when it's one of our parents, it's a problem, right? And that's something that even A-Dub and I've talked about on this show, that we hate the narrative that's been around Caleb, and that's why we've been trying to debunk that. Now, Ken, I'll just be honest with you. I'm a Justin Fields guy, right? So for me, I was upset when we traded Justin Fields, but I've had to turn the page, and that's why we brought you in. I wanted you to come in and separate fact from fiction, and I know you're going to do that because you don't hold any punches. But then also, I wanted to get your unfiltered thoughts on the pro day. How did he do? You know, what was kind of like the vibe and what was the feeling there, man? Because, you know, there's a lot of reporting that's been done out here, but I wanted to get it straight from the source.
Most definitely. Pretty much in the words of R.I.P. Danny Green, in the words of a former legendary coach, Danny Green, we are who we thought they were. Everything that you've seen from Caleb since he came into the scene, that's exactly what he did. He threw a great ball to the sideline. It looked like it might have been incomplete, but Taj Washington caught it, snagged it, another great young prospect. People just got to accept the fact that Caleb is a great player. He has the leverage. He knows, look, I don't need to meet with all 32 teams. You think I'm going to fall to the Raiders? Yeah. So when you want to carry yourself as somebody who is the star of the show and a franchise guy, you got to limit some access. And if you're the franchise guy at a pro day, the most anticipated pro day since Sam Darnold's pro day, yeah, we were all on Caleb's time, awing at everything that Caleb did. And he came out and he said, and he does what he always does. He's consistent like a John Cena or a Dwayne Johnson. And I mean that like the most, like he's not fake. He's not disingenuous in how he comes across. And he does a lot of great character work that people don't talk about. So everybody who was just chilling, Keenan Allen came out, people at the pro day, you know, it was really, I'd say, a proper send-off for a guy who far and away clearly is the best quarterback prospect in this draft. So,
you know. So with that being said, right, here in Chicago, as soon as we saw that large contingent led by Ryan Poles down there, and then we saw the dap up with Keenan Allen and Caleb there. But even in that moment, people criticized Caleb Williams. They're like, oh, he walked on the field looking aloof, looking like very cocky, and then almost tried to act like he didn't even see Keenan Allen. And I'm like, man, everything this kid does, it seems to have some sort of criticism attached to it. That's polarizing. And even here in Chicago, Ken, it split the fan base in half, right? Because you had people that were defending Justin Fields and on the inconsistent play that we've seen. But a lot of that, I'm not going to get off into too much of that here on this show, but we know a lot of that was, you know, based on the circumstances around him. But however, Ryan Poles and the operation here, they're looking at Caleb Williams and they believe that he is that generational talent that we in Chicago greatly need here at that quarterback position, right? So when you say that, you know, you saw him make some good throws there, can you kind of talk about delivery? Can you talk about how he looked in far as rhythm with those receivers? And then also, too, did he do anything that stood out to you during that pro day?
I'll say this. When you set the bar so high, he did nothing that would have surprised you, but he's so elite because to perform at a high level throwing, going through the whole route tree, throwing with great anticipation, great touch, and great accuracy, especially on deep balls, at a couple 60-yard bombs. I mean, obviously, every quarterback needs a little bit of refinery when it comes to footwork and all that, but he's just pro-ready in his throws, his setup, his release. You know, all that kind of reminds me of Drew Brees in the pocket a little bit in terms of just how he sets and just how comfortable he is. Cause he's only about 6 feet, 6'1". And to just confidently make the throws that he makes consistently. The receivers had a great pro day. Marshawn Lloyd, the running back, had a great pro day, and it was all in sync cause Caleb was in sync. And I think that's something that you don't take for granted, especially in your franchise quarterback.
You know what, Ken? This is something that I wanted to ask you about. So, obviously, you know that I had interviewed Brendan Rice at the Senior Bowl. I'm not sure if you had got a chance to chop it up with him, but then also got a chance to talk to him again at the Combine. And he was asked at the Pro Day, you know, to talk about, like, his favorite teammate or the person on the USC team that he's the closest with. And he did not name Caleb Williams. So everybody kind of ran away with that because they're like, well, why wouldn't he name his quarterback as like the guy on the team? Because he named one of his fellow wide receivers. And I wondered if that was just more about just the bond in that wide receiver room versus any sort of beef or any sort of anything with Caleb Williams. But what do you know about that situation? And is that anything that we should, you know, kind of be thinking through when you think about a quarterback to receiver relationship?
That's the funny thing. Yeah, it goes back to narratives, right? People report on something they didn't see and run it as a narrative for something because they either don't like Caleb, like you said, like he's a clean record, nothing wrong with him, no off the field problems, but people just find a reason to nitpick. And the whole teammate thing, I mean, he threw 12 touchdowns to Brendan Rice, so I'm pretty sure they were very well acquainted. And he was throwing great balls to Brendan. And Brendan made it clear. He said, I know it said 4-5 at the combine, but I'm a 4-4 guy. So, and whoever gets him, they're going to be really lucky. But yeah, that whole notion of him being a bad teammate, no, he really wants to win. He loves his guys. I mean, as soon as he came to USC, he got the whole team beats by Dre headphones. He brought his O-line with him to win the Heisman. Some of his teammates have talked about just stuff that he's done, just little things, just for them around the way, not telling anybody. He's like, there's countless stories, like all his own linemen. So it's a lot of it is just people want to find a reason to tear down a prospect, either because they don't like them or, you know, they want to see if their stock will fall, if teams get scared off. So, oh, he fell to our team. We always loved him. Actually, there's like 6 months of you kicking his back in. So this is draft season. A lot of things are lies, but what you can really depend on is all the interviews where Brendan Rice speaks glowingly of, you know, Caleb. And plus, you also got to remember, that's Jerry Rice's son.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the closest people, I think Brendan was there 3 years. Coming from Colorado, you have the receivers and the DBs and the running backs that you see every day. So, I mean, and that wide receiver room was huge, like, the past couple of years. That, you know, from Addison to these two guys, like, nothing to worry yourself, nothing to worry about.
Question for you surrounding around what Caleb Williams would bring to a team. I'm obviously assuming that the Bears will draft him at number one, but you know, you never know. But what would you say that Caleb Williams is going to bring to a prospective NFL team?
I would say the same professionalism that Justin Fields brought, to kind of go back, not really go back, but to make comparison. Fields pretty much did everything right off the field. Caleb is going to be in that same vein. He'll just play a little bit better, but he also has better players around him now. Now, don't get me wrong. Caleb needs an offensive line. So the 9th pick is going to be really interesting, because I think you could take maybe if an edge falls to 9, but you don't draft a franchise QB and then don't put good offensive linemen in front of him.
100%.
So for me in that regard, I just got to say Caleb's going to bring stability and a willingness to win, and there's some accountability there too. Like, he says it, he hates running. He does not like running. Imagine a guy that supremely athletic, who could have been an Olympic swimmer at one point, tells you, I don't like running. I love being a distributor of the ball and facilitating, you know, first downs and progress down the field with the receivers that I got, the running backs that I got. That's somebody that you're going to want to rally behind, and you're going to want to love and support. And he's going to have some growing pains, because when you're used to playing on a team with no defense, you think everything has to be a touchdown. So once I think, obviously every rookie has those growing pains, once you let them know, like, hey, man, we got 30 yards on that drive and a field goal. Sometimes that's okay. Next one, we'll get a touchdown. I know you wanted a touchdown, but we can't always. Once you just learn how to kind of taper the competitive nature of a person and get them focused on the goal, but still being able to maintain that competitive nature and it spreads throughout the team, then there'll be an expectation of failure and just not executing isn't okay. And I think that's what Caleb brings in. But it's really convenient, and it's kind of like, if also if you're Caleb, like, I just saw them run out one black quarterback. How is the city going to do me if I struggle or if I have a – or because I don't think – personally, I would have fired Eberflus. I don't see how he's the guy long term.
Yeah, we talked about that on the show, Ken. There's no reason he should be back. If Justin Fields got up out of here, there's no reason they should have ran it back with Eberflus. I agree with that 100%.
So if Eberflus struggles this year, you blaming Caleb or you blaming the head coach?
See, well, that's at a certain point, you're going to have to stop blaming the quarterback, right? And that's the problem that I ran into with this situation with Justin. You put him in a situation where – of course, he was inconsistent in parts, but then you look at the situation surrounding him. And while I do appreciate that Ryan Poles has learned from that mistake, because now he's trying to bring in whoever the rookie quarterback is. He's trying to bring in a system around that person that works, but also the right players. We see with that Bears defense, it had a resurgence last year. It actually looked like a Bears defense for the first time in a very long time. We brought Montez Sweat here. But now you see them bringing in a Keenan Allen. You brought up a point about the offensive line, and A-Dub and I have talked about that ongoingly here in this show, that they have to clean up the interior of the offensive line. Now, I do think that the team may think that Braxton Jones can't get the job there at left tackle, but I do feel like one position, at least on that offensive line, is sewed up, and that's with Darnell right over there at right tackle. But to your point, Justin Fields and the way that that situation was handled, that would give me reason for pause, and that's probably why the Bears – are doing their due diligence. I heard that they had separate meetings with Caleb Williams over the course of the week to kind of try to establish that relationship, because they did not get that opportunity at the combine. And I'm hearing like different reports of basically them saying that, you know, it went well, and basically they wanted to see how Caleb interacted with his teammates. And so I think that's going to be good for them to kind of get to know him. But I think also more importantly for Caleb to get to know this organization, because the thing that he said at the combine, Ken, is he wanted to understand if the Bears wanted to win.
I told you. The dude is a fierce competitor. Like, the same way you watch old videos of, like, you know, Peyton Manning going in on his guys, him and Jeff Saturday going at it, Tom Brady and other guys going at it. He brings that kind of fire. So if that's not what Eberflus is ready for, that's not the energy he's on. If your quarterback has more juice than you in terms of holding the team accountable, it's going to look away. But I do love the Shane Walden hire, because you really need to marry a great or just a good offensive coordinator with a young quarterback to really develop them and get them comfortable into the skeleton of what the offense is going to look like.
What about the talk surrounding him that he's Hollywood? And there's been a couple of Bears players in the locker room that have kind of, you know, made some comments through the media and saying, hey, if he is the quarterback, don't bring that Hollywood shit here.
Yeah, that's just because he's the quarterback at USC and he won a Heisman and got like $2 million in NILs. And honestly, as a vet, Jalen probably could have said it a little bit better. But I think we understand what he meant. I mean, yeah, like every rookie needs to get hazed, but also it comes to a certain point. Like, I remember when Dez Bryant was like, bro, I'm not getting hazed. They brought me here to you can carry your own bags. I'm a grown man. You're not hazing me. So I just think it's going to come down to Eberflus and if they build a system of protection around that offense. And if he just sticks to what a defensive guy should do and gives the offense everything it needs, whether it be free agency, whatever, it'll be fine. But again, the whole body language, him being aloof, all these other things, it just comes back to a narrative of like just people, whether you just don't like a person because you don't like them, or the racial aspect of not liking them because you don't want to see a black man moving and stunting like that. People just got to just really say, okay, what did he really do wrong? And just listen to what that person's answer is. What did he actually do wrong? Legally, whatever. What did you do wrong? You'll find yourself not being able to come up with an answer. You don't like how he reacted to something. Okay, I'm pretty sure somebody didn't like the way you reacted to something, and they think, oh, you got bad body language. You're like, you know, that was one day. That was a snapshot. That was a snapshot of one moment. Like, you can't keep holding people to a snapshot of one moment saying this is who they are. This is what you want them to be. Maybe you just don't agree with the direction of the franchise, but don't knock a generational talent.
Everybody knows these pro days are scripted, right? They've been rehearsing and what their routes they're going to throw and all that good stuff. Well, I basically saw that one of the receivers there at the workouts got hurt his hamstring. So then they had to make adjustments on the fly. And I don't think that enough people talk about how the workout, from what you said, went pretty damn flawless for a last-minute adjustment that needed to be made, because now the other wide receivers probably had to run different routes than what they originally intended to run and so forth. And again, it shows you Caleb and his instincts and his abilities that it didn't even bother him. And he still got, you know, all his work in and he was trying to get in.
Yeah. And I just, the thing that people got to remember is every CEO is different. Every boss is different. You don't dictate how a boss moves. They do. So sometimes when you're watching somebody and you want them to be the figurehead, well, then you actually have to get out of the way and let them be a figurehead. You got to fall in line. And again, he's controlled his narrative this entire time for what he wants done and how he wants it done. That's why I look at him and Marvin Harrison Jr. and Joe Burrow, three people that changed the way you have to access quarterbacks now. Like, you're going to do it on my time, and you're going to watch my tape. And then as you watch my tape, then you can come tell me what you think I did wrong or right. And then I'll give you context. But most people just don't want the context. They just see USC and the Heisman and the commercials and all that, as if Jim McMahon didn't get commercials and everything else. It's weird. It's like you judge people for what they have, but then you know the position that that you want them to take, they're gonna have those perks. So how about you just watch people how they handle success, and then maybe judge them off that, and not judge them off a mistake. One person's mistake is a defensive player's highlight tape. So if you picked off Caleb Williams in college, that's a highlight tape for you. That helps your draft stock. Like, people, this is a give and take game. Like, this isn't zero sum. Like, there's wins and losses on both sides. It's ebbs and it flows. So when people just kind of make the characterizations about Caleb, they're probably just a hater, you know?
I guess for me, when I look at so many different pieces of this situation, and again, Ryan Poles, and I've talked about this all offseason, Ken, this man can't have an easy decision ahead of him, right? Because honestly, you have hanging over you in the balance your job, because you cannot pass up on another freaking top prospect. You know, they passed up on CJ Stroud last year, which, you know, no one's, at least I will say, I'll speak for myself, I didn't see that coming from CJ Stroud. Everybody was talking about Bryce Young, right? And Bryce Young, he shit the bed, which thankfully for us in Chicago, because of him doing so, we have the number one pick. But I don't think Ryan Poles is in any sort of situation to say, you know what, we're going to run it back with Justin one more time and see if things can kind of unfold the way that we hope they do. He's no longer in a position where he can hope for anything. In his mind, he had to go after what he felt like was that generational quarterback. Now, I was going to ask you, Ken, they're talking about Jaden Daniels, Drake May, and even I've heard some people uttering J.J. McCarthy, which I'm not huge on him, but want to get your thoughts. Are there any other quarterbacks that you think that could be a play at number one?
No, like, they'd be stupid. They would be so unbelievably stupid that, like, I would just fire Poles after he made the pick. Like, Caleb is Drake May. I talked to some of his teammates. Everybody loves him. Say he's a dog, a warrior. That's cute. I would say he might be a slightly more athletic. I think he's a better prospect than what Josh Allen was. not what Josh Allen is right now, but what Josh Allen was, where it was kind of sketch, people, them climbing up to take him. So I think we're seeing an iteration of that. But he's okay. Also a quarterback in North Carolina, where it's a system because they had Sam Howell. And before Sam Howell was Mitch Trubisky. And that's how we started this whole cataclysm of terrible draft picks. And I think Stroud, me personally, I thought Stroud was always better than Young. He's a dog. And I'm from Cali. I watched both those cats. Bryce Young went to Cathedral first, then transferred to Modern Day with that super team that Modern Day is, where they get like 50 transfers a semester and like 30 scholarship guys every year. So, like, Stroud earned it out the mud for 4 years. Like, they both earned it, but, like, I just like Stroud because I think he's an elite pocket passer. There's no other option but Caleb Williams for the Chicago Bears at one. I don't even know how you would justify. Like, if you weren't going to take him, why would you even come to the pro day? Like, if you're polled. I think if you're polled, you want to meet your franchise. There's nobody who can jump in front of you. Like, there's no – you can't jump the number one overall pick. So it doesn't matter what the Commanders do it to. Like, Caleb is a guy. You go to his pro day. Like, you spend the most time with him. You don't trade to get Keenan Allen because you're not trying to get a Caleb Williams. Like, that's just – you don't do all that. Like, and Michael Penix Jr. is a great prospect, in my opinion. He's better than Bo Nix and J.J. McCarthy combined. More of an accurate passer and a better thrower. I think he's the best thrower of the football. But because he has the whole injury history thing, people like to gloss over. But that man was throwing ropes. That man was out here throwing faster than the speed of sound to Roma Dunne and all these other guys. Like, he can sling it. And then he was at the combine throwing right-handed. I'm like, come on, man.
Yes, he was.
Like,
now there was one thing. I'm not sure if you saw this, but I'm walking through the hallway at the combine. And I, you know, because we were seeing certain quarterbacks warming up. So you would see JJ warm up and it was cool, whatever, like this. But I sat there and I watched Michael Penix Jr. warming up and throwing the football across the ballroom to his receiver. And to your point, just on a rope, just pew, pew. And I'm sitting here, I'm like, I'm watching this and this guy's throwing in a fucking ballroom like that. And I was like, God damn. And I'm like, why aren't more people talking about this kid? You know what I mean? Like, we talked about him during the college season, but now we get to the draft season, and I'm hearing people talking about he's going to fall to the second round. And I'm like, why? How? It can't just be about the injuries. Like, are you guys watching the film on this kid? Are we watching these throws? I don't get how certain quarterbacks, like a J.J. McCarthy, and I know, audience, you guys know I cover the Big Ten. I'm not trying to pick on him. You guys thought I picked on C.J. Stroud. It's just certain guys, when I'm watching, we cover these teams, I'm not impressed by. And I thought J.J. McCarthy played – in a system that shielded him. He didn't do anything special. And let's be honest, Michigan's defense was dope, and that offensive line was great, and the running game was fucking phenomenal. So I don't understand how J.J. McCarthy is even talked about as a top 10, top 15 draft pick. I just don't understand.
Yeah, it's mind-boggling between him and Bo Nix. I'll just never really understand it. I'm like, if you want Daniel Jones, that's kind of the road you're going down with those two. Yeah, it's laughable at this point, some of the comparisons. But Penix, it's just really his age and the injuries. But he checked out medically at the combine, which is the crazy part.
He was back there for 3 hours, bro. Before we get you out of here, man, any last thoughts on Caleb? Anything that just kind of like your lasting thought of from covering him these last 2 years, and then also just anything that you just want to impart to the audience of just this Caleb Williams experience and potentially being the number one pick for the Chicago Bears?
I'd say you're going to get a high-quality human being who's going to do a lot of innovative things. You know, he did a lot of innovative things with NIL. He's very conscious. I'm just saying Jordan had a great relationship with his father. Caleb has a great relationship with his father. Last time Chicago had something like that going, it worked out. to the tune of 6 NBA titles.
Ooh, I like that. I like that smoke. Mm.
Sometimes you just got to be like, you know what? Our way really wasn't working. So maybe we're going to have to just, like, when the whole saying, Jesus take the wheel, you actually got to get your hands off the goddamn wheel. sit your ass in the back or sit in the passenger seat and run this navigation or this music playlist. But, like, sometimes you're not the one driving the car. Chicago, y'all got to be patient. Y'all ain't been winning anyway. It's like you weren't really winning with Jay Cutler. And when you did win with Jay Cutler, you were mad about it. And then when you won with Rex Grossman, y'all were still mad about it. Like, don't be a hater. Be greater, please.
Ooh, damn, Dub. Hey, on his way out, man, he fired off a couple rounds, huh?
Yeah, he did, man.
You got to spin the block sometimes. Rule 22, double tap.
Well, hey, Kid, man, we appreciate you so much, brother, man, for pulling up with us here today. I know you're busy. I know you got to get running. Before you get out of here, man, tell the audience how they can find you and your work and what you guys are doing over there at Touchdowns and Tangents.
Thank y'all. I appreciate you. Thank you, everybody out there listening. Yeah, Kenneth Berry, _ Ozo Grande on Twitter, Touchdowns and Tangents, pretty much touchdownsandtangents.com. We have literally all the podcasts, different platforms we're on, Apple Podcasts, iTunes, all that, everything. Just touchdownsandtangents.com. You can go there. And also write for Full Press Coverage. You also check Full Press Coverage and then go Raiders. Just type in Full Press Coverage. Kenneth Berry, my name and some of my work will come up. And definitely go on Anchor. You get the Anchor app and listen to Touchdown Just Hand Just Overtime, where I have some like audio and video for like, let's say the Senior Bowl. You know, like we interviewed like what 35 prospects. Like you can go listen to that whole omnibus version of that. Thank y'all for having me again. I appreciate y'all.
Oh man, you know it's all love, brother. Man, we'll be in touch, man. I'm sure we'll be in touch a lot, man, leading up to that draft, bro.
Hey man, good luck. Good luck with that pick. You know what one is, you just gotta get 9 right.
You know what, man? And we will me and you will talk about that a little bit more in detail, man, because I think we gotta trade down. But you know, we'll talk, man. Well, man, thanks so much for jumping on, brother.
Salute, good luck.
All right, my man. Stay up.
Peace. Sir.
Oh man, Dub, that's good. That was great. I love having Ken on here, man. So what was kind of like, you know, some of your takeaways as far as, you know, some of the things that he shared when it came to Caleb? Because I agree with him 100%, man, when he brought up the narrative piece.
Yeah. And
just how that could be dangerous.
Like you said, it's false information, man. And when you got the stories wrong, you know, you're kind of like throwing dirt on someone's name, you know. And a guy like him, Caleb, who's been phenomenal in college, you don't want to do a guy like that.
And audience, you know, I've been very consistent in saying that I don't like how everyone does their job in the media, right? I always talk about how some people make it about themselves and some people want to do the clickbait to get you to read their articles.
Right.
So I said, we're going to bring somebody on here that's covered the team, that's not biased, ain't going to shoot it to you straight with no chaser. That's how we do it over here at DB, right? And you guys know he didn't pull any punches. I asked him specifically straight questions about all the narratives that's out there. He shot every single one of them down.
And that one that he talked about with the height situation, I was like, man, you know what, dude? The height wasn't a problem winning Heisman, right? So you can't use that against the guy. I mean, the guy knows football, knows how to play football extremely well. We're talking about Caleb. Look, you can't use certain things against him.
No, I agree with that, A-Dub. So let's turn the page over here a little bit, A-Dub. Let's chat about the Arlington Heights situation here, audience. So you know, A-Dub and I, a couple weeks ago, we talked about pretty much the news that the Bears announced their plans for Lakeshore, right? And there were a lot of people, A-Dub, when we released that episode, a lot of Bears fans was in the comments talking about how excited they were to hear that the Bears potentially would not be leaving Chicago. And I said, listen, remember what I said on the show. This situation is far from being over. Because now look at what Arlington Heights have done. They have put themselves right back into the race, A-Dub, because now they're proposing a tax cut compromise for the stadium. And that's the thing that the Bears, I'm sure, was hoping was going to happen. I'm sure the Bears and Arlington Heights have been playing this blinking match, seeing who was going to blink first. And when the Bears made that news, Arlington Heights had to go back to the drawing board. So now when you see this, it's like, well, damn, what the hell's going to happen with this stadium?
It's like the ball is pretty much on the Chicago Bears court. And that's where they wanted it at anyway, right? To where now they have the option and the choices now and the favorable choices in their hand. So now you at a point to where, look, Chicago got to play ball, Arlington Heights got to play ball. Whichever one comes up the best proposal is probably where the Chicago Bears may decide to go.
I think Kevin Warren, when he was going through this process with Arlington Heights, obviously he wanted to have that tax figure reassessed a little bit, but I think he was just looking for them to be a good partner, right? And so I'm wondering now, does this change his position on Arlington Heights? Does this change his position with what they were talking about here with the Chicago site?
It could potentially, Prez. We really don't know, man. Because, you know, Mayor Johnson, we know he is a businessman. I'll give him that credit. So you never know what he can work out with the Chicago Bears. And they become now a strong player and keep it in Chicago. So it's not a foregone conclusion that the Bears are going to Arlington Heights. So now the playing field is open, bro. It's going to be a battle now.
In my opinion, I think this is a part of Kevin Warren's master plan all along. I think that he's using Chicago as leverage to get what he wants done there at Arlington Heights. Because, again, audience, and I could be wrong, but the Bears don't strike me as the type of organization, meaning the McCaskies, that they're going to spend $190-something million and let it go to waste. I'm sorry. Just something about that A-Dub just don't sit right with me.
But the alternative is, how much money will they make in Chicago? And, of course, they're going to make a lot of money regardless, no matter where they go, right? Arlington Heights or Chicago. But now they get a chance to weigh everything out, because you and I both know that there are a lot of Chicago fans who in Chicago who wants the Bears to stay. And you never know what they may be willing to spend if it was to happen. So that part of it plays a big factor too.
So, man, I just don't know how this thing is going to play out, bro. We have to wait and see on the day, Dub. But, I mean, honestly, do you have a preference, or do you not care the way it goes?
For me, I'm so used to it being in Chicago that I will love it to stay there, right? If we talk about just the drive out to the Arlington Heights and what that space looked like, I mean, you've seen it, I've seen it. Man, I'm cool with that too, Prez. I'm cool either way. But if I had to really choose between the two, man, keep it in the shot, baby. Keep it in the shot. That's what we're used to, man.
T-A-Dub, I was kind of on that. And then I saw the plans that they have for Arlington Heights, and I'm like, that would be kind of lit. I'm not saying this audience, because I just recently acquired property out in that area. This has nothing to do with my financial status whatsoever. I just want to put that out there. But I think it'd be kind of cool, man, to see that out there, bro.
You know, when I started hearing about what it would look like by the lakefront, I'm like, damn, that dude look intriguing too, though, you know? So I couldn't ignore that part of it. So I'm like, man, that one looks torn, Prez, because the plan they were talking about, what it might look like, also struck me as like, man, they could probably make a lot of money doing this. But you're right, man. That bigger space out there, Arlington, just might be slightly better if it is, you know? So I got no issues either one, but it's just a good feeling, good vibe you get knowing they will stay in-house, man. How proud a lot of Chicago fans will be if it would occur that way.
And to be honest with you, A-Dub, if we were to host one of those major events with that new dome stadium on the lakefront, imagine aesthetically how that would look. You're downtown Chicago, so it's easy for people to get in and out of these different events. You know, so I kind of look at it from that standpoint of aesthetic-wise. Shit could be kind of lit.
Yeah, man. Then you think about all the hotels, man. A lot of business right there. You know, they going to turn up, you know. Just the people coming in who wants to, you know, enjoy the Chicago Bears from out of town. They going to stick around for a few days. You know, you and I both love downtown Chicago, man. It's a beautiful place. So all that together with the new stadium, I mean, it's just going to be a good joy, man, to see, just to be around that type of environment.
See, this is why A-Dub is good at what he does for work, because now I'm over here conflicted even more. Because I kind of been like okay with the idea of Arlington Heights, but then he started talking again about this, and I'm like, yeah, he right. I hope it kind of does stay in Chicago. He right.
Because you know you and I, how we work, bro. When you and I done going to these games, what you and I do downtown? We kick it.
We kick it, man. Restaurants, bars, we enjoy that shit. Yeah.
So imagine we got the stadium going on, bro. It's really lit now. You know what I mean? It's fire down here, bro. Imagine what you and I be doing then.
Shit, I'll never be going home. That's why I'm over here trying to That's why I'm over here like, damn, man, I just got this crib out here in these burbs, and I'll be coming back into the city and then be like, damn, I wish I would have stayed in the city, dog.
Just imagine, man, the fun you would have, you know, just in the city.
All right, A-Dub, one more thing I want to chat with you about before we get out of here. Now, the Bears are free agency. Everybody's got their opinions on how the Bears did. But why don't you kind of get your thoughts on how the Bears were? I thought the Bears were pretty active, A-Dub, through that first week and even the Friday before free agency, right? I mean, I thought that we did a really good job when we went out and got Swift and Bayard, Everett, you know, and, you know, just those are just a few of the names. But did you know that you have the second and third and fourth waves of free agency? And that's where some of the division comes in. So I want to kind of get your overall thoughts on how do you think Ryan Poles did in free agency, and do you think that he addressed major needs for the team?
I thought he did a good job addressing major needs, Prez. I'm not saying he's done yet, you know, but for the first wave, you talk about getting a good wide receiver to pair up with DJ Moore. You and I both agree that was definitely a good move right there. So whether it's for any quarterback, we know probably going to be Caleb Williams, it'll be great for him. Swift, a big-time running back. So just seeing these moves like that were impactful, and then you also can see some moves that were made for just depth pieces, right? You still need that. So I thought Ryan Poles did a good job at addressing some of the needs. I know he's not done yet. Got a nice draft pick, a couple of draft picks that he can make happen. But, yeah, man, overall, I think he's done a very good job this offseason at building around this new quarterback.
So the thing for me, and I did leave out Keenan Allen's name just because he was acquired via trade, but A-Dub, I do think it's fair to include him in that free agency thing, so good call there. I think that for me, if I'm like just grading this class, I got to give it like a solid B. And the reason why, if we're going to now include, you know, the trades and stuff, yeah, I got to include that Justin Fields trade into the mix, right?
Yes.
And the fact that you only netted a conditional six rounder for a quarterback of Justin Fields' skill set, I know all this. They probably make prayers. Move on. Fuck you. Tell me what to do.
Right.
But I'm still on that, man. And I mean, come on, man. Six-round draft pick. So that, to me, drives that grade down a little bit. But I would say this. Keeping Jalen Johnson in the fold. Huge move, right?
Yep.
I brought up DeAndre Swift. A huge upgrade at the running back position. I can't wait to see what he does here in Chicago. They're going to turn him loose, and that's going to be really great to see.
Ooh-wee.
I talked about the need for a backup tight end to complement Cole Kmet. They went out and got Gerald Everett, right? The Keenan Allen move that you talked about. Kevin Byard. We need to replace Bojack. Well, you and I kind of were like saying, like, hey, well, we don't think that this guy is going to be like a Pro Bowl type player, but he's going to come in here and bring stability. And it's a contract that's not going to break the bank. Fine.
Right.
The Keenan Allen acquisition, audience, you guys already know how we feel about that. That's a great acquisition for any team, but let alone a team that's looking to draft a quarterback, a rookie quarterback, number one, to be your starter day one. You've got to have a guy like that in the fold.
Absolutely.
But A-Dub, you have these ancillary pieces, right, that they brought in. And the number one thing that you and I talked about was beefing up edge rusher, our D-line, the interior of the offensive line.
Right.
And I have to dig Ryan Poles, and these are probably things that he's going to look at the draft, but they got a limited number of draft picks.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily think that they did a great enough job with those positions of free agency. Because now I'm still wondering at center, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
You brought in two guys, potentially they're going to compete against each other.
And either of those guys really, to me, stand out as a for sure thing, you know? Bates, he's okay, you know, but it's like, do you know if he's the guy that really can hold down that center position? And you really don't know. So it remains to be seen when it comes down to him. And then you talk about just the other pieces on the O-line. You're like, hey, do we got enough there, right? So it does matter, man. There's still some things that Ryan Poles has to do, and he hasn't done it just yet. So you're right, bro. The grades you gave him is got a lot of validity to it. It's valid. I give him the same type of grade you gave him. You know what I mean? Give him somewhere like a B, because there's still some things he has to do better with this team. We're talking about going to the next step or next level.
And you also got to realize that I thought that we overspent in free agency last year when we picked up Tremaine Edmonds.
Yep.
Not to say that I don't think Tremaine Edmonds is a good ball player, but 4 years, $72 million, I thought that was a big overspend compared to TJ Edwards that you brought in for 3 years, $19.5 million, who, in my opinion, played at a Pro Bowl level all season.
Yeah, hey man, he talked about playing above your salary. I thought he did that.
Yes, sir. But now when you look at the DeAndre Swift signing, a lot of people like were messaging us after we recorded it, like, guys, do you think that they overpaid? Because it's a $24 million contract for the guy. And I said, well, it all depends on how he's going to be utilized here in Chicago. I think there's more to DeAndre Swift to be shown in the NFL. And I think it's going to be very important to see what Shane Waldron has up his sleeve.
Absolutely, Perez, because you saw a little bit of everything. You saw what he did in Detroit. You saw what he did with the Eagles. It's like, okay, I want to see the total package in Chicago. And then we unleash everything that this guy can do. So you're right, Perez. We haven't seen the best of Swift yet. So if he can put it all together in Chicago, man, we may get his best season, you know? So that's a possibility there. And he just might be worth the money at that point.
So I think the big problem that people have with that is the presence of Roschon Johnson and Khalil Herbert. They kind of thought, was that really a position of need when you had other areas on the team? And I think that's a fair thing to brought up. But when I saw that, that's when I knew, oh, this Caleb Williams thing is probably going to be true.
Right, right. Absolutely, Perez. And the one thing I give Swift credit for, Perez, you talk about putting him in the passing game. I mean, he's better than the two running backs we got in that department.
He's a dynamic talent because we know what a Khalil Herbert, we loved what he brought to the table. We definitely loved what Foreman did last year. And you guys already know how I feel about Roschon Johnson.
Right.
But Swift can do things that, like, these guys can't do, right? Because one of those running backs does one thing well, then the other running back does something well, and you put it together, you're like, oh, I wish I had that in one package. Well, DeAndre right. Swift could be that potentially.
He could be. This guy, DeAndre Swift, can just do so much, man. And you talk about just getting those yards. I mean, he's just one of those guys. And he would fit well for a guy like a Caleb Williams, you know?
So let's talk about the trenches really quick, right? So I basically said, hey, signing Shelton, traded for Bates. We just don't know what's going to happen there, right? Because in my heart of hearts, I feel that a guy like Tevin Jenkins has already shown that he should be a starter on your offensive line. Nate Davis, in my opinion, not so much, right? So I think that there's a couple positions there on that offensive line that are in flux.
Yep.
So I'm just curious to see how that rolls out. And also, we know how that defense looked last year and how they were trending, right? It saved Matt Eberflus's job.
True.
But I'm hoping that that just wasn't like a flash in the pan situation and we can see that consistently over the course of the 2024 season.
That does matter because, you know, people are going to start loading up on Sweat if they feel like the Bears doesn't have anything else on that D-line, right? So you're right. I don't want this to be a fluke kind of a thing. We know our secondary is tight. I love what we got in the secondary.
And you know what? One other thing that I wanted to bring up, and we haven't talked about yet on the show, the Bears signed Jonathan Owens away from the Green Bay Packers, and we all know who his wife is, and that's Simone Biles, U.S. gymnastics legend. And for all the talk that goes out there about Taylor Swift, with, you know, when it comes to a Travis Kelce, I didn't think enough attention was given to the fact that Simone Biles, I'm like, wait, we won't get no hype to Simone Biles, and she won gold medals for this country. And y'all love this country, right?
Right.
Right? They're going to have me over here talking like Snoop Dogg. And y'all got love for Dr. Dre and Snoop Dogg? You know what I'm saying? Like, but you get what I'm saying, man. So I'm like, give her flowers. You know, and I don't know much about Jonathan Owens and what he's going to bring to the table with safety. I think it was a really fine depth signing. We'll see what it does.
Right.
But I was more interested in the fact that she's going to be coming to Bears games and being in Chicago. I was like, all right, I love that.
Yeah, me too, Perez. I mean, trust me, she's popular, man. I mean, she's probably the best gymnastic we ever seen, you know, at least in my point of view.
Goat.
For sure, bro. So it's like, hey, man, she's showing to the games, bro. Hey, how you doing, Simone? How you doing? I'm Dub.
Oh, I know you're going to be trying to pull up.
You know what I mean? Look, man, she a legend, bro. So it's like, hey, man, salute to her. You're right. Taylor Swift got her flowers. She deserves hers as well, man. So if she comes to Chicago, man, she deserves a standing ovation. You know what I mean? She's done phenomenal in her craft. And I got to salute that, man. She's the best in the business.
That's right. That's right. Like, so we'll see how people keep that energy, man, because we know how people are, man, when it comes to this country and how that's important.
Yep.
I'm like, all right, now. She's not the ultimate. You know what I'm saying? Sure. She represented this damn country. Let's see how y'all treat her when she comes to Soldier Field. I'll be watching. If they don't, in my opinion, A-Dub, if they don't show her the proper appreciation as far as what Perez thinks, I'm getting on this show. I'm blasting y'all fan base. I'm blasting this fan base.
We, I don't think the Bear fans want that smoke, Prez. So they don't want that, man. They're going to show some love, bro. I'm optimistic. They got to show love.
Yes, sir. Last point. Caleb Williams, man. If everything aligns and if the Bears draft him, because, again, I got to keep putting that out there because we don't know what they're going to do. Can't hint. But anyway, if everything aligns for Caleb Williams, meaning, well, what they did offensively, the weapons that they added to this offense, if they get the offensive line to the place where it needs to be, with this Bears defense playing like it did last season, do you see the Bears being a playoff team in 2024 if everything aligns with Caleb Williams as your quarterback? One.
Absolutely, Prez. 10 wins, baby, at least. 10 wins, wow. Man. Wow. I'm going to call it out, man. Because you know what, Prez? If we don't get 10 wins, man, look, it's in my opinion, it's a failure because you got everything almost intact, bro. There's no perfect team in the league. You and I can talk about that forever, right? I mean, even the team that won, right? We saw what happened, man. Mahomes didn't have every ingredient. He didn't have everything, but they still won. Kansas City still won, bro. But the thing is, the Bears got enough, man. You got a very good defense. You got a secondary. You got a monster on the D-line. You're now putting a lot of effort into the offense. You got two big-time wide receivers, a big-time running back, and hopefully, if you see your quarterback that good, you know what I mean? A nice quarterback. What more do you really need to get 10 wins, Prez? You got a lot of stuff already, man. At this point, I'm looking at this as, you know what? You got to be a team now that's fit to go to that next level. Because now the players who you drafted a couple years ago now, you know, they are getting better, you know? So it's like, look, you don't have time to waste. And at this point, you're bringing somebody in a good situation. This is probably the best situation I've ever seen a quarterback come into in Chicago. I mean, it's been so many years since the 85 Bears and all that stuff you can talk about. But looking at it right now, Prez, this is probably the best situation I've seen a quarterback come into. All you got to do is perform well and play well. That's it. You don't have to be no superstar. Just play well.
People are saying he's generational, right? So right. As a rookie, that's a lot to put on the guy. But, man, if he could just, you know, realize any of that potential to complement the things that you're saying, 10 wins, I mean, that should be something that we see. I just think that's putting a lot of pressure on the rookie quarterback, man. But, again, not all rookie quarterbacks are created equal, right? And from things that Ken was saying about him, listen.
Yep.
He was like, hey, this guy built for it. He loves to win. That's what he's about. And he even poured cold water on those people that was clowning Caleb for crying to his mom after losing in the ball game. And I would say this, man. When people was doing all that, I'm like, well, you never played the game at a high level.
Right.
Because I sure shed tears on the football field when I lost my state championship game against Mount Carmel. I still hate Mount Carmel to this day. I respect him.
Right.
But you know how it is, man. It's on site with me when it comes to Mount Carmel. I bawled like I ain't cried in my life before. And that's when you are fucking working your ass off for something. You're trying to achieve something at a high level. You're going to have emotions. And so yeah. For anybody to criticize somebody for crying, I'm like, well, I don't know about that. That ain't the flex that you think it is.
Right, right. And to me, Prez, they just reaching, man. Like, you're really reaching for something negative. You talk about a player over that, you know? And to your point, Prez, a lot goes into playing the game at a high level, man. That's a lot of sacrifice into that. You sacrifice, you know, hanging out with friends. You sacrifice doing all other things that you want to do, right? And you just focus heavily in on your craft and putting in the work to be better at it, you know? And you go out there every day and put it on the line. So, yes, if you lose, man, it's hurtful. It's painful, man. You know what I mean? And you will cry because you put so much work into it, you know? So I can't knock the guy for crying, man. That just shows me that he cares.
Exactly. And AW, you summed it up perfectly. You talked about the sacrifice part. And that's the thing that a lot of people don't think about when they talk about these athletes. While we're out here living our lives and doing what we want to do, a lot of these guys are in the lab doing film study. I mean, look at a Brady type. Brady would be in bed at 8 o'clock at night. He's missing out on time with his family at the time. And then ultimately he lost his family as a result of his wanting to be the greatest.
Right.
So a lot of times people don't talk about the fact that what these guys are sacrificing. Now, some people may say, well, Prez, that's self-serving because he made that choice. Well, yeah, but at the same time, if he didn't make certain decisions, then people will be clowning him and talking shit about him like they're doing with Caleb Williams.
Yep.
So it's kind of like a lose-lose situation for some of these guys. So honestly, I didn't care about the crying. I don't care about the painting of the nails. Do I paint my nails? No, but that's his prerogative. He says that he does that to honor his mother. Who am I to criticize that? I love my mom.
Yeah.
And AW, you know how I get down. I'm a competitive motherfucker. I hate to lose.
True.
So why would I have an issue with a guy that's coming in here with that type of energy? If he wants to win, goddamn it, come in here and let's go.
For real. And that's what I'm talking about, that Perez. Hey, look, show us that you hate to lose, man. Come and bring that same energy here in Chicago, man. Work your tail off and get better as the quarterback. That's what we want, man. So, look, I cannot hate on that, man. But Keith, that's going to continue working hard, putting everything on the line, man, to go out there and perform.
Because I'll tell you one thing. I'm tired of losing. I'm tired of having years where we on this podcast and we trying to muster up things to say because we're talking about a depressing-ass season. Oh, man, we deserve to be on this show being uplifted and uplifting the fan base. And right. So I'm hoping that this season is different. And that's it, man. I want us to get past the point of us making comparisons. I just want us to appreciate what we have in front of us and the opportunity in front of us. And let's go out there and chase greatness, baby. Let's go.
Yeah, man, we on the up, man. The Bears team is on the rise, Perez. I'm going to enjoy this, man, because I still think in my heart, man, that this team has a chance, bro, to do something very good next season, man. And I'm happy for this unit. I'm happy for what Ryan Poles have done, and I want to see what this team can really do. So I'm not going to battle with nobody about no Justin Fields and all that stuff anymore. I'm moving on, man. It's Caleb Williams' time. It's his show, man. Let's see what the kid can do. So if he can do anything like CJ Stroud did, bro, that's a win.
You ain't lying there. You ain't lying there. I swear, if he do anything like that, I'll be like, all right. All right.
We admit
I was, listen, I will continue to say I was wrong about CJ Stroud. I was wrong. Yeah, but see, a lot of people, they got revisionist history. They try to act like they were on things that they weren't on. I'm like, man, I didn't hear nobody talking about CJ Stroud last season. It was all about Bryce Young.
Yep.
Facts. You know what I mean? And I wasn't even sold on him.
Right. Me either, bro. Like, no, I ain't sold on Bryce Young. I don't think he's going to be all that, bro. He may become a solid quarterback, but I never saw greatness in him. So, but as far as CJ Stroud go, you're right, Perez. I wasn't talking about him. I'm like, look, I don't know what the other quarterback's going to be. You know what I mean? He went on my radar.
And you know what? That's the thing. It's like at the time when Ryan Poles made that decision to trade the pick, I'm like, yeah, that was a good call. Because I was like, these guys ain't better than Justin.
Right. Good call. Good move made right there by Ryan Poles because I didn't see nothing special.
Yep. So, man, we'll see how this thing play out. But, A-Dub, you said it best, man. We're done with the division and the debate. And that's why we had somebody to come on here and talk about Caleb because we're moving on over here. We are moving forward.
Yes, sir.
You know, we told you guys we missed Justin well. But, listen, now Justin, he's taking his career in his hands now. You know what I'm saying? He's going to go over there to Pittsburgh and he's going to show them what's up. And guess what? In contrast, he's probably going to show Ryan Poles and the Bears organization what's up, too. But listen, that's on him. I got to focus on Chicago Bears business over here. There were a lot of fans that were hitting us up saying, I'm going to be a Pittsburgh Steelers fan next year. And I was like, kind of like, yeah, I'm not going to be. But I'm definitely going to be pulling for Justin. If I see him doing something from afar, I would be happy for him. But I was like, now nah, this Bears fandom, it runs too deep in these veins for me to ever switch up. Because right. of one player. I love Justin, but nah, it's bear down over here for me.
For sure, Perez. I'm with you, man. Like I said, you and I have always had respect for the Steelers team anyway, with Mike Tomlin doing his thing over there as the coach. Look, it stays the same way. Nothing changes for me with how I feel about the Steelers, you know? Good for them. Been a good organization. I give them a lot of credit what they already done, but as far as being a fan, look, man, Chicago, that's what it is.
Well, listen, A-Dub. We are out of here for now, audience. We appreciate you guys and your continued support of the platform. We hope you enjoyed this show. Hey, feel free to share it with a fellow Bears fan or a friend of yours. If anybody you come across is like, man, I wonder what's up with Caleb. I wonder, you know, I would like to get to know Caleb a little bit more. Really, send this episode over to him because I feel like Ken did a really good job of breaking those things down. But again, we appreciate your continued support and for helping make us a top 10 Chicago Bears podcast. We're going to holler at y'all next week. We got another special guest on the show. Listen, audience, in this offseason, A-Dub and I, we're going to start digging into our network. And we're going to be hitting y'all with some special guests. So stay tuned. But for now, we are out.